So tonight is the third in a series of three talks, and I will begin by presencing this book, Atlas of the Heart by Brené Brown. It's really a wonderful book. The majority of the book, she talks about different emotions, and it's kind of a catalog of common emotions and how similar emotions differ. And then at the end of the book, she talks about her theory of meaningful connections. And this theory of meaningful connections has three elements: grounded confidence, the courage to walk alongside, and story stewardship. So 2 weeks ago, I talked about grounded confidence. Last week, I talked about the courage to walk alongside. And this week, I'll be talking about story stewardship. And I'll begin by saying that when I first encountered her theory, first encountered this model, and I heard these three elements, grounded confidence, of course, you know, want to connect with others, I need to be connected to myself. You know, courage to walk alongside. Yes, it makes sense that part of healthy connection is really sticking with others, even through difficult periods. But then I was puzzled by story stewardship. I didn't know quite what to make of that. When I read her description, it made a lot more sense. And as I've reflected on it over the past couple of years, it's made even more sense. So much about being human is about our stories. And when we connect with a friend or with a lover, often what we're doing is sharing our stories. They're the entertaining and fun stories that, you know, we laugh about and bring us together, you know, and obviously when two people spend time, they often get stories of their own like that, which, you know, feeds a lot of inside jokes and this sort of thing. They're the poignant stories, either the things that poignant from my past or the other person's past that I share that mean a lot to me, or even the poignant moments that we share together, and then the story about that, reflecting on that. Those are very powerful. And then there are the very vulnerable stories, the stories that I have trouble admitting even to myself, very hard to share, that have to be a lot of trust before I could start sharing that with somebody else, you know. And being able to share these vulnerable stories back and forth, that really is a very deep level of emotional intimacy. And so, of course, how I handle those stories, how I handle the stories that a friend or a lover tells me, says a lot about who I am as a friend or a lover, you know, and this is story stewardship. So Brené Brown talks about two branches of story stewardship. The first branch, she frames it as rumbling with the story. I really like that, you know, having this adventure, you know, rumbling with the story. And she talks about three skills there, which are listening, discovering, and staying curious. And so, of course, you know, we need to listen to the stories of our friends and lovers. But listening is very deep. Listening is more than just listening to words. It's also taking in body posture, facial expression, tone of voice. What's the emotional energy? And how does the emotional energy perhaps shift from one part of the story to another part of the story? You know, like tracking all of that. All that is listening. You know, and discovering, asking the question, it's a very skilled listener that can ask the questions that can draw out more meaningful aspects of the story. You know, maybe it's even something that the person telling the story had never considered, but when we ask the question, they say, wow, that's a really good question, you know, that kind of thing. So discovering. And staying curious. Because, of course, if we're with somebody, with a friend or a lover a long time, we're probably going to hear some of these stories repeatedly, you know? And if I'm hearing the story the third, the fourth, the fifth time, am I still curious about it, you know? And in particular, if it's a vulnerable story, it may be that each time it's shared, the person is sharing a little bit more because they're trusting a little bit more. You know, can I remain curious and be aware at each telling, you know, how it feels a little bit different or has gotten a little bit deeper, you know? So all that is staying curious. So that's the first branch, just rumbling with an individual story, listening, discovering, and staying curious. There's another branch that she talks about called building narrative trust. And the three skills she lists under that are believing, acknowledging, and affirming. You know, and certainly believing is important. I mean, how can I say, if someone shares a poignant story and one of the most undercutting things we could say is, I don't think that really happened. I think you made that up, you know, like that kind of thing. You know, we really need to show not just a verbal, just, you know, assent of, you know, of course we believe what the person is saying, but really act in a way that shows that we really believe what they're saying and we believe how they feel about what they're saying. Acknowledging, a lot of that, I think, is about how we connect the story we've heard to the person's present circumstances, you know. You've told me about how you struggle with X. How do you feel about this, you know, challenge that you're facing tomorrow? You know, this kind of thing. Acknowledging the way that the story plays out in their life. You know, and that is really a way to make someone feel very heard when somebody else can see how my story, the story of the thing that happened in my past, influences the way that present events feel, you know. And affirming is important also. Affirming, I think of first of all as, you know, say I'm sharing a story about a time that I really struggled. You know, an affirming friend might be someone who can point out strengths that I had, even in that place of struggle. Like, you know, Mike, it's very good that you saw what the right thing to do was, or, you know, or that you made this good choice. You know, affirming is also, you know, if I had stories about struggling in the past, but I've grown, someone who can really affirm, you know, that I know that in the past you struggled with X, but you seem, you know, much stronger now, much more capable, you know, affirming the present level strengths that might stand in distinction to how it felt in these stories. So all those are wonderful skills of story stewardship. And this is what Brené Brown shared. And so I'll call that kind of a first level of story stewardship. And that is just, there are some wonderful skills there. I think a whole other level opens up when we start thinking about challenging stories. And I'll say at the outset, we can't really challenge anyone's stories until we establish a tremendous amount of trust, a tremendous amount of connection, you know, so that the other person really feels in a very deep way that our challenge is coming from a place of love and not just, you know, from a need to knock them down or that sort of thing. But I will say that, and this, to some extent, this gets into story stewardship even with respect to ourselves. You know, I think it's true of all of us that we have stories that keep us small. We all have stories that limit, you know, set limits for how much we think we can do, how wise or powerful or loving I think I am, you know, all of that. Because I think it's universally true that all of us are stronger, wiser, more resilient, more loving than we can understand, you know? And so there are ways that our stories keep us small. And certainly personal growth is about finding the ways that my story keeps me small and growing past that, you know? But it's almost the nature of the process that it's hard for me to see, especially if I'm attached to my story or I've been telling it a while, it's hard for me to see that it's a story that's keeping me small. Sometimes it's even the case that, you know, at an earlier point, I had a breakthrough. And at the time, that story was a heroic story. But as I've grown, the thing that used to be a heroic story is now a story that's keeping me small. That can be a very hard thing to see through, you know. And this is where other people can be incredibly helpful, you know. As I've often said, you know, the feedback that we most need is feedback that we most don't want to hear. You know, the truth that we need at any stage of our personal growth is often a deeply difficult truth, a challenging truth that I would rather not face, you know. And so it can really be wonderful to have intimate connections with friends or lovers where people feel that, you know, not all the time, but there are moments that they can challenge us when it's in our best interest, that they can put question marks around our story and say, I think you're stronger than this, I think you're better than this, you know, this kind of thing. And I'll say in my life, I'm very lucky to have a variety of stories along these lines. I mean, friendships along these lines, especially in the men's group that I have, where I meet weekly with these men. With these men and also with many of my other friends, there's, you know, we've known each other for years and there's this kind of carte blanche, you know, whenever you need to challenge me, you know, that kind of thing. And it's tremendously refreshing to have those kinds of relationships. And it's difficult also, I mean, especially in that men's group, you know, different ones of us are on the hot seat, you know, week to week. And to be on that hot seat, you know, it's always a difficult thing. Men are telling you things that you just don't want to hear about yourself, you know. But it's always that thing of, I don't want that to be true, but then it resonates somewhere deeply. I know that that's true, even though I don't want it to be true, you know. And facing those truths again and again and again really accelerates personal growth. So it is wonderful to have friends who can provide that service of speaking the uncomfortable truths to you, you know, as a gesture of love and support. A whole other level of story stewardship comes with what are the stories that reflect to us our greatness? What are the stories that reflect to us our nobility, our largest qualities, you know? And in ancient times, especially in prehistory, those stories were provided by mythology and ancient symbol traditions. More moving into late antiquity and up through early modern times, the role was provided by traditional religions. Now, we live in a time now that people are not as acquainted with traditional religions or not as acquainted with mythological systems. The curious thing, though, is we live in a time when, you know, over the past 100 years or so, that there's been this explosion in the entertainment industry, movies and TVs, which are presenting us with stories, you know. And so just to take movies, for example, there are some movies that are just purely entertaining and there's nothing deeper to them. And they're, you know, or there's ones that purely they're a tearjerker or they're designed to make us afraid and then there's nothing deeper to them, you know. But there are certainly profoundly archetypal movies. Every once in a while, there is a profoundly archetypal movie. One of my favorite movies, for example, it's a classic old one, The Seventh Seal by Ingmar Bergman, an incredibly archetypal movie. And there are often movies that show growth and healing. There are dramas that show growth and healing. There are even comedies sometimes that show growth and healing. And so it's funny, we live in this time in which we could stream all kinds of movies, we could go onto Amazon and buy any book about any religion or mythology. You know, we live in a time where we're almost paralyzed with the number of choices we have. But I think Joseph Campbell's advice is really helpful on this. He said very simply, follow your bliss. You know, some part of us, some deep part of us just knows what tradition or what movie or what story we need to follow for our own growth. You know? And, you know, it's about really trusting where's the juice that makes us feel most alive, you know, and following that juice. Once we start to, you know, explore a symbolic system, sometimes it's something that comes up in our dreams, and then we start researching it, you know. But once we're on that trail of something feels vital, you know, that is a story that has the power to unlock something in us. And it's wonderful, certainly, if two people can be sharing that journey and exploring in that way together, you know. Finally, I'm going to share a quote along those lines, not so much a story, but kind of an archetypal perspective. This is a very challenging quote. It's from David White. And he said, the message we learn from Greek mythology, so he's thinking about the stories in Greek mythology, the message we learn in Greek mythology is that every time a god touches you, it's both a violation and a blessing. Again, every time a god touches you, it is both a violation and a blessing. And I heard that quote about 5 or 6 years ago, and I've been thinking about it a lot. And it's an incredibly challenging quote, but it is also, I find, an incredibly wise and incredibly deep quote. And so here's how I think about it. It really is about the way that trauma shapes our lives. You know, for example, in my own life, I suffered a lot of trauma in my teenage years. And without going into a lot of story in detail, essentially I attended 5 family funerals in my teenage years. And it really, in many ways, deprived me of having an ordinary teenage high school experience, you know. So it was a kind of violation of my development. But because I went through that, I think that provides much of the reason why I was so willing to seek out meditation and start a meditation habit, you know, and so willing to explore healing in life, you know, studying energy healing and all these other things. So, you know, and meditation and energy healing, all these have wound up being blessings in my life that I would not have explored had I not been through that trauma, you know. So being touched by that God, really the God of death, you know, both violated me and was a blessing, you know. And in many ways, I have a trust now that, you know, I've been touched by ALS, you know, which is very much a violation of my own bodily autonomy. You know, I don't understand the full teaching yet. I'm learning more and more every day. I certainly cannot claim mastery or wisdom around this, but I trust that there is a blessing that corresponds to that violation, you know? And it's something at least to think about with trauma in your own life. You know, the ways that you have been most violated by trauma, what are the blessings that come from that, you know? So at this point, I will share the quote sheet. I see the message seals. I'm not sure. Not sure what to make of seals. Oh, yes. Yes. Got it. So, at the top is Brené Brown's story, Theory of Cultivating Meaningful Connection with Three Branches, The Elements of Story Stewardship, and then the David White quote. Then a quote from Denis Diderot, "We swallow greedily any lie that flatters us, but sip only little by little a truth we find bitter." Two from Carl Jung. Carl Jung said, "Neurosis is suffering which has not discovered its meaning." He also said, "We meet ourselves time and again in a thousand disguises on the path of life." You know, and it's very funny how are all the stories that we have about the people outside of us, you know, this person did this to me, you know, how much are those just ultimately telling us about ourselves? Hermann Hesse said, "I cannot tell my story without reaching a long way back." You know, and that's interesting. I certainly think about my own story reaching back at least as far as my parents' early childhood, you know. Helen Luke said, "The inner story, though the same in essence for all, is always single and unique in each human being, never before lived and never to be repeated." Joseph Campbell said, "People say that what we're all seeking is a meaning for life. I don't think that's what we're really seeking. I think that what we're seeking is an experience of being alive so that our life experience on the purely physical plane will have resonances with our own innermost being and reality so that we actually feel the rapture of being alive." You know, and as he said in other places, mythology is part of what helps us make that connection to have that experience of being alive. Incidentally, if you're interested in exploring mythology, I would highly recommend The Power of Myth, this series of six interviews over six episodes that Bill Moyers did with Joseph Campbell. Absolutely stunning. Annalise Nin said quite simply, "Shame is the lie someone told you about yourself." Madeline Engel said, "Our story is never written in isolation. We do not act in a one-man play. We can do nothing that doesn't affect other people, no matter how loudly we say, it's my own business." Solzhenitsyn said, "The simple step of a courageous individual is not to take part in the lie." You know, and certainly that was very relevant under Stalin in Soviet Russia. And to some extent, it's relevant in our own situation as well. Flannery O'Connor said, "In the long run, a people is known not by its statements or its statistics, but by the stories it tells." Then a long one from Marion Woodman. She said, "Reading ancient myths and fairy tales can be very helpful because those stories came spontaneously from people who had not studied psychology. Those stories came straight out of their unconscious and therefore show us how the unconscious works unimpeded by conscious intervention. The images are clear and stark. For those of us interested in why we do what we do when we want to do the opposite, the stories are gold mines of information. If we accept, as Jung believed, that there are what he called archetypes in our unconscious, then we can read myths and fairy tales with an open mind. If we do not accept the existence of archetypes, then we have no way of explaining the superhuman surges of energy that magnetize us towards something or someone or repel us. The word does not matter. What matters is our recognition of the power of these energy fields in our unconscious. They can dictate our destruction if our ego is weak, or they can be our greatest gift in life. If we cannot tell the difference between human and superhuman or subhuman energies, we identify with the gods, goddesses, devils, and enchantresses, and eventually walk into self-destruction." one of my all-time favorite quotes from Ursula Le Guin. True myth may serve for thousands of years as an inexhaustible source of intellectual speculation, religious joy, ethical inquiry, and artistic renewal. The real mystery is not destroyed by reason. The fake one is. You look at it and it vanishes. You look at the blonde hero, really look, and he turns into a gerbil. But if you look at Apollo, and Apollo looks back at you. The poet Rilke looked at a statue of Apollo about 50 years ago, and Apollo spoke to him. You must change your life, he said. When true myth rises into consciousness, that is always the message. You must change your life. And I'll just say that that is just such a wonderful expression of what it is when mythology becomes alive for us. You know, I look at Apollo and I see Apollo looking back at me. You know, that's a wonderful image. Maya Angelou said, there is no agony like bearing an untold story inside of you. Anthony DeMello said, you have yet to understand, my friends, that the shortest distance between a human being and the truth is a story. Byron Katie said, reality is always kinder than the stories we tell about it. Gilda Radner said, I wanted a perfect ending. Now I've learned the hard way that some poems don't rhyme and some stories don't have a clear beginning, middle, and end. Life is about not knowing, having to change, taking the moment and making the best of it without knowing what's going to happen next. Delicious ambiguity. Julian Barnes said, how often do we tell our own life story? How often do we adjust, embellish, make sly cuts? And the longer life goes on, the fewer are those around us to challenge our account, to remind us that our life is not our life, merely the story we have told about our life, told to others, but mainly to ourselves. The Zen teacher Mark Nepo said, whether through the patterns left in the snow, or geese honking in the dark, or through the brilliant wet leaf that hits your face the moment you are questioning your worth, the quiet teachers are everywhere, pointing us to the unlived portion of our lives. When we think we are in charge, the lessons dissolve as accidents or coincidences. But when we're humble enough to welcome the connection, the glass that breaks across the room is offering us direction, giving us a clue to the story we are in. Joy Harrow said, we are all here to serve each other. At some point, we have to understand that we do not need to carry a story that is unbearable. We can observe the story, which is mental, feel the story, which is physical, let the story go, which is emotional, and then forgive the story, which is spiritual, after which we use the materials of it to build a house of knowledge. The Buddhist teacher Sharon Salzberg says, mindfulness helps us to get better at seeing the difference between what's happening and the stories we tell ourselves about what's happening, stories that get in the way of direct experience. Often such stories treat a fleeting state of mind as if it were an entire and permanent self. Jane Hirschfield said, begin again the story of your life. A quote that I've used before from David White. This is from a webinar during the pandemic. I often think we're a good 6 to 7 years behind the frontier that we've actually physically aged and matured into. And that one of the greatest disciplines of existence is just to stay up with the frontier of your own maturation, to have said goodbye to what you need to say goodbye to, and to be saying hello to what you should be saying hello to. But caught in the enmeshment of the strategic mind, which coalesces its identity around false stories and holds on to them, quite often we're a good 6 to 7 years behind where we actually are. Rebecca Solnit said, the bigness of the world is redemption. Despair compresses you into a small space, and a depression is literally a hollow in the ground. To dig deeper into the self, to go underground, is sometimes necessary. But so is the other route of getting out of yourself into the larger world, into the openness in which you do not need to clutch your story and your troubles so tightly to your chest. Being able to travel both ways matters. Sometimes the way back into the heart of the question begins by going outward and beyond. Malcolm Gladwell said, "We have, as human beings, a storytelling problem. We're a bit too quick to come up with explanations for things we really don't have an explanation for." Brené Brown said, "Owning our story can be hard, but not nearly as difficult as spending our lives running from it. Embracing our vulnerabilities is risky, but not nearly as dangerous as giving up on love and belonging and joy, experiences that make us the most vulnerable. Only when we are brave enough to explore the darkness will we discover the infinite power of our light." Resma Menakin said, "Trauma is also a wordless story. Our body tells itself about what is safe and what is a threat." Daphne Rose Kingma said, "If you are having trouble loving yourself, imagine that everyone in the world is a hungry soul whose life has been imperfect. Like you, they had imperfect parents. Like you, tragedies and difficulties befell them. If you could hear each person's story, you would probably be moved to tears and want to reach out and embrace that person. You would want to tell them that in spite of everything they've gone through, they have great value." You know, and as she suggests, it's such a gift to give to ourselves to realize that after, you know, in spite of everything we've gone through, we have great value. Philip Pullman said, "After nourishment, shelter, and companionship, stories are the things we need most in the world." Neil Gaiman said, "The stories you read when you're at the right age never quite leave you. You may forget who wrote them or what the story was called. Sometimes you'll forget precisely what happened, but if a story touches you, it will stay with you, haunting the places in your mind that you rarely ever visit." Terry Pratchett said, "People think that stories are shaped by people. In fact, it's the other way around." Keo McClear said, "There are moments when what we need, what will benefit us most, is the power to style our own story." Makia Jackson said, "We all have a story, and through sharing our very own, we can change the world."